Hi, Greg. This is Beverly from Woodstock, Georgia, and I'm the Money Bomb winner. Thank you so much. This has come right on time, and I want to thank you for such a great show. It's always very interesting. You give us so many pieces to the puzzle that we're all trying to put together, and you have such a great interview style. You're not such a fearmonger or alarmist, but you do really get to all angles of the story or whatever your guest is portraying. Some of my favorite shows have been that in regards to the Electric Universe and the Sophia mythos of the Archons. And so often we do forget Sophia and the fact that we can overcome those Archons. So just thank you again and keep up the great work. You're doing a great work for us all. And perhaps we can all create a new reality once we really realize how much power we all really do have as a collective. Thanks again and take care.
The planet's puppet masters almost surely have a plan. There's clearly maybe something there beyond the realm of man. And until you've thoroughly tested every last close trusted view, I find the more you think you know, the less you really do.
That's true, Dr. Zaius.
Where would we be without THC? 'Cause we know they're lying to us, just don't know to what degree. Yeah, where would we be without THC? The highest side chat show, Greg Carwood and Company.
All right, people, by now we know that only a fool would trust their health and safety to the string pullers. From the widespread depletion of nutrients in our food, GMOs and poison-covered produce, to the corrupt medical field that's set up to bleed you dry in more ways than one, and always making more and more vaccines to stick you and your children with, often under the threat of law. Folks, this system is not for our benefit. But what if this rabbit hole goes a lot deeper than even some of the most cynical guests have speculated, and we're actually in the midst of a military vaccine holocaust going back hundreds of years? Well, that is the theme of the day as we talk to today's guest, Patrick Jordan, an independent journalist who specializes in meta-analysis, who has done the tedious work of combing through hundreds of scholarly works, scientific research, medical patents, and several gigabytes of related data in his path to writing over a dozen books, over 30 years of research, all of which can be found at his website, vaccinefraud.com, an impressive body of work that I'm very psyched to talk about. Patrick, my man, welcome to the Higher Side.
Hey, thank you very much, Greg. Hello, listeners.
Yeah, I'm psyched to do this, man. Thanks for being here. As you know, it was a listener, Annette, who introduced us and bought me your first book, ICD-999, Vaccine-Induced Diseases, The Chronic Serum Sickness Postulate. And it definitely goes deep. Now, I think most of the audience is skeptical of today's medical system for a bunch of reasons, concerns about the vaccine autism links, distrusting of the chemo money-making machine, and while we might consider ourselves enlightened for that, it seems like in your mind, from what your research shows, these are very entry-level realizations. Is that fair to say?
See, what I do is I blame our ancestors. And I have a phrase that I adopted from the movie series Alien, where it took one person to get infected and they let the alien in the airlock. So at some point in history, when evil was just in its fledgling state, our ancestors let this in. They invited it in, like inviting a vampire into the house. And it could have been, this is just a postulate of mine, it could have been snuffed out early on, but it was let in, it was invited in, and it grew like the most rapacious parasite. And right now, what we're doing, we collectively, if you pay taxes, you are making the beast grow as if it was a tapeworm sucking your blood.
Damn.
So, you know, at entry level, yes, this is the most pernicious evil on the planet. And if I can go back and refer many times to my collection of books, in my next two books after ICD-999, I wrote The Rise and Fall of Kingdom Plantae, The Rise and Fall of Kingdom Animalia. And in there, I have what I consider proof positive that what we consider the healthcare system of the United States and Europe was 100% created from the military.
Right.
So when you go into a hospital or clinic, you are literally entering the camp, the field hospital of a hostile occupying force. And so again, Greg, this is what I do, is I blame our ancestors. If they had just told us that it's not a doctor in a white coat with, you know, a friendly smile and a nice sterile needle with a vaccine in it. We're just here to help. We come in peace. Hmm. If they would have said, these are your freaking enemies and their sole goal is to kill us, then the entire, like, dynamic of how we just live in the world would change from that point forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I do appreciate that outlook. To drive home that point that the medical system was born with bad intentions, just like you said, I have a quote here that kind of says the same thing, but you say, the CDC is run by a surgeon general. It is military. The hospital system was set up by French military, hence the term a doctor's orders. Right. The U.S. corporation health system was formed by the Marines. It's all military. You are considered the enemy. Therefore, whatever they do to you via their ongoing Operation Paperclip experiments has you as expendable lab rats with the benefit of electronic medical records to track their process. I mean, that's grim stuff, my man. But I guess when you take this stuff back to the beginning, what do you see? Where are these things getting set up? Who are the players involved?
Okay, this was my dilemma. I had abandoned religion from my life decades ago. I just left it like a dead baby by the side of the road, and I said, I'm never going to have anything to do with religion again. Then in the year 2000, my mother came down with kidney disease. And it's like, well, where the hell did this kidney disease come from?
Right.
And when I cracked open the Merck Medical Manual, so this is like the doctor's Bible. You go looking for glomerulonephritis, which is what she was diagnosed with. And it's like, well, what is that? Well, it's kidney destruction. How does that happen? A brief, like one sentence entry in the book said it typically comes from serum sickness. And you'll find it in like laboratory test animals, but it rarely happens in humans. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, there's a byword, there's a phrase that nothing is officially true until it's been denied by the government. And it's like, what do you mean? Serum sickness only happens in test rats. So I went down that rabbit hole, the trail of kidney damage to serum sickness through medicine that takes you to politics. And then all of a sudden, it's like, as you peel back these layers, religion came into play. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, I had abandoned that nonsense years ago, and I was compelled just from the patterns that I was seeing to go, now, wait a minute, government is religion. And I started going back to the source material all the way to Babylon. And if people haven't heard me before, Greg, I tend to like take a really slingshot orbit around Jupiter, but I'm coming back to what you asked.
Sure.
Where's the source of this? When did it happen? And from my point of view, we're talking at least 6 to 10,000 years ago, the ancient cults, the blood cults from Babylon, they had a, well, and okay, so in the liturgies of Kiel, mm-hmm. which is 5,000 years old, you've got this correspondence that diseases were named for demons. But then that means demons were named for diseases. It was like a one-to-one correspondence. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, now, wait a minute here. Religion and medicine just got linked 5,000 years ago.
Hmm.
Religion is politics. Politics is religion. And that's my contention. We go to Rudolf Virchow, I think 1847, and they sent him out that there was a cholera epidemic or something. They said, you're an important scientist. Go out and find out why the cholera happened. Mm-hmm. And he came back. He sat down in front of the council and they said, okay, well, you know, what was the source of the cholera outbreak? And back in those days, they were expecting him to say, oh, it was a bacteria or it came from bad water or whatever. And he said, politics.
Hmm.
And they were outraged. You know, they're expecting the disease to come from something that they could pin something on and make it the bad guy. And he said, it came from politics because politics creates poverty. Poverty creates filth and filth creates disease.
Mm-hmm.
And so he has been quoted as saying, Medicine is politics. Social medicine is politics writ large, meaning the bigger the monster gets, the more all-consuming it is.
Right.
And so what I came to realize, Greg, was we were not looking at compartmentalization like the Manhattan Project, where you just work on the high explosives, these guys will work on the particle physics, and then we'll have some guys doing metallurgy. And nobody knew what the hell was going on. Mm-hmm. They were like, they were sequestered from each other. They didn't know what the big picture was. But medicine, religion, and politics is like, it's the foundation of all this stuff. So who's in on it? How far back does it go? 6-10,000 years, the blood cults, and they have been attacking our blood ever since.
That is intriguing and deep for sure. So the book I read, your first book, is called ICD-999. Where did that title come from? And maybe you can define your chronic serum sickness postulate for us as well in that context.
Yeah. So I'm sorry, because, you know, I am a writer, and I think more metaphorically than literally when I hear words now, because, you know, words have become my life. Where did that come from? Well, it came from Pat Jordan being very anally compulsive about what he does, because throughout my life, I figure if somebody wrote a book, it's actually my obligation to open that book and read it from the first page to the last page. So in studying multiple chemical sensitivities, which I was a victim of, I had tripped across all of these like correspondences. Here we go again with that, with autism. And it's like, wait a minute, I need to look into this, because these disease presentations are too close. And in doing that, I fell across the, I think it's the 2002 Burton report on autism. You know, he had that, congressional hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did what I always do. You know, you ask the question, where did ICD-999 come from? It came from me being anal to not just read the high points and, you know, anything that might appeal to a family that had autism and look for comfort or hope. I read the thing cover to cover. And oh my God, I was nearly bored to tears, like nearly done with the paper. And they got to this point where it was just these just meandering machinations of lab coated professionals saying, what should we do with the international classifications of diseases as it relates to this series of numbers? And see, that's what ICD stands for. It's WHO, a World Health Organization, International Classification of Diseases. So they have a manual where when they say somebody coded, meaning that they died, well, if they're not dead and they're being in the medical system, there are codes that you put down for showed up with a tapeworm, showed up with, you know, a car accident. Because, you know, even trauma has the ICD-9 codes. It's become ICD-10 since then. That's why I trip up sometimes, just keep my facts straight. And in the Burton report, and sorry, I'm jumping around like a bug on a hot plate. In the Burton report, these guys were going, you know, what should we do about these ICD codes? And they labeled the 900 series. So being as anally compulsive as I am, it's like, well, what is this ICD series? And what does it mean? I went to the source material, and it's like, oh my God, at the very end of the international classifications of diseases, the last codes that they had in the book were that of what was caused by vaccines. And I thought, these dirty bastards, they knew all along that they were literally creating disease with vaccines. They had it coded, for God's sakes, and they hid it at the back of the book, and in the middle of the Burton report was this, you know, kind of like casual conversation of, well, yeah, you know, we're rotting brains out of the kids of North America. What should we do about these codes? And I'm thinking, this is the greatest cover-up. And, see, here's the worst part. People missed it. They'll read the Burton report, and they'll, you know, they'll worship the doctors that reported there, like Bradstreet and the other guy that was like internationally famous from Britain. I forget these guys' names.
Right, but the ones that are in more recent times famous for trying to publicize that autism vaccine link.
Thank you. And here it was. You know, there's no freaking puzzle. They had it codified. My God, the ICD-900 series was vaccine-induced diseases. And so, to answer your question, that's how I tripped, literally, just because of my method of reading a paper cover to cover. I tripped across this, found the codes, and the middle title of the book, ICD-999, Vaccine-Induced Diseases, led me to see in sciences, especially organic chemistry, well, any chemistry for that matter, there's this thing called mechanism of action.
Mm-hmm.
If you know how something works, then you can control it and you can replicate it. And so we've got ICD-999, they've got the name for it. We know that it's vaccine-induced disease. Well, what's the mechanism of action? And the deeper I dug, I came across, well, my God, what vaccines do is they cause serum sickness. This very thing that I was looking for the answer to why my mother had her kidneys spontaneously fail.
Hmm.
And I got to tell you, my last book, the one that I have ended the series with, is called Continuum. Because think about what I just took everybody on a trail with. We started with a question. And it began with the vaccine, and it came all the way back to the vaccine as answering everything from medicine to religion to politics of what is wrong with the entire universe that we're immersed in right now.
Man, yeah, it is a big can of worms for sure. And to clarify this for people who are new to it, you have a lot of diseases and conditions in the book, way more than just autism, that are apparently classified as this ICD-999 in this category. And if these are things that are caused by serum sickness, essentially, you know, aka vaccines, list some of these conditions and illnesses that you think can be considered the end result of a vaccine and then a several decade incubation period in some cases.
Sure. Going to scroll down. I got my books handy. So here we go. The pathway to this was that I pretty much aspire to bring my income up to poverty level. That would be riches for me. And so in order to obtain research materials, I would go to library book sales, and you can often get like hardbound books for $1. So I would go there and I'd literally fill cardboard boxes with books, and I would buy as much reference material as I possibly could, and especially focusing on medical texts.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the books that I acquired was Pathophysiology by Wilson and Price. They're two nurses.
Mm-hmm.
Early on in the book, they cover serum sickness. And in the list of that book, this to me was that revelatory part of my life from which you can never return. Okay, there's many times in life when you come to either realizations or a fork in the road where you can take the wrong path and you can get lost, and you know that will set the course for your life. This path set the course for my life where I realized everything that we were ever told in medicine was not only wrong, it was wrong on purpose for occulting, which means to cover, to hide.
Mm-hmm.
They were occulting this knowledge because if you had it, then you would know that the sons of bitches were lying to us with lethal intent. And so we're back to that military assault thing. So let's take a look at some of the things that serum sickness can present as in the body. Urticaria, which is itching with welts on the skin. So it's a rash. But one thing that you'll realize going through my book, ICD-999, is that the most important thing to remember about serum sickness is that it can have signs and symptoms that appear on the skin. When that does happen, that means that what's occurring in the body is systemic. So it's not just, oh, you know, I got an itchy rash on my skin. If that itchy rash is in any other tissue, then it can cause damage in that other tissue. Angioedema, swelling of the skin, mucous membranes, you know, like your throat, your bronchial tubes, viscera, meaning your guts and your brain, aching joints, bruising, fevers, or measles-like rash. So that's just angioedema. Okay, so we went from just, you know, your basic itch like you might get if you went out into the lawn without any socks on to something pretty serious, to fever. And now, wait a minute, muscle pain, sorry, malaise. Okay, so let's catch up to these. Itching, rashes, fever, muscle pain, and malaise. When you read insert on a vaccine, it'll say, side effects from the vaccine may be mild, and it may be in the form of the rashes, fever, muscle pain, or malaise.
They tell you right there.
They're telling you, but they didn't tell you the whole story.
Right. That's your body telling you the injections aren't good.
Your body. Okay, so this is how it is. Your body literally is like the system status board at a power plant or like a railroad, you know, where they have the control station where they can see where all the trains are and where all the little intersections are, or a nuclear power plant where, you know, they got the steam lines and electrical, and you'd have like little lights lighting up if there was a problem somewhere. Your body is just like that. So when you get the things that are just at the head of the list, we haven't even gone down the list yet. If you get those things, those are quote unquote the mild reactions on the vaccine insert, but they're also systemic. And what we learned from the Burton report from a drug company representative is that if you got a systemic reaction on your skin, man, it's through your freaking body.
Right.
And so what they're covering up here is if you have even the mild, what they, you know, in quotes, the mild reaction to a vaccine, man, you've been injured. Serum sickness is the third hypersensitivity reaction of what they've classified in immune system responses. Everybody knows hypersensitivity reaction number one. That's allergy or anaphylaxis. So, you know, you got hay fever. That's like mild form. Or you're the kid that goes to grade school and somebody opens up a package of peanuts, and next thing you know, you're jabbing yourself in the thigh with an EpiPen because that's anaphylaxis. Well, think about that.
So just to clarify, so from your basic everyday runny nose to something like a peanut allergy, or like some people are allergic, they say, to bee stings, these are all related to vaccine. So if you see someone who has a peanut allergy or a bee sting allergy, you can put your money on it that they had a vaccine when they were a kid. Is that the idea?
Well, see, I wasn't even going there. I kind of like that. Well, I was trying to work, and you know, I'm sorry this is haphazard and I sound like I'm manic, but there's so much information to get as just like the basic framework within your body's responses to the outside world. There's certain pathways that it takes. And so the first pathway of hypersensitivity, meaning it's like the oh my God reaction to the outside world, is allergy or anaphylaxis. So a bee sting is the equivalent of a vaccine in the body's response to it, because they're both unnatural and they come from the outside.
Right. And the delivery system's the same, needle.
Thank you. Thank you. And actually, some of the components within a wasp sting, like histamines and some other cell signaling components, are exactly what we make on our own bodies. And it actually starts this inflammatory cascade. And part of the problem is if it's introduced the wrong way, like through a sting or through a vaccine, the body then goes, oh my God, that was histamine. I think I'll tag that as an antigen. And all of a sudden, you're not only attacking the histamine that the wasp stung into you, but you're also attacking your own natural body components. Mm-hmm. And so this is that quasi world that you're bringing us into of natural world reactions and vaccine reactions. They're nearly identical. when they break the boundaries of what makes us human. And to be stung, to be penetrated, is not normal, man.
Right. So we were going to talk about the list of conditions. We got to some of the early symptoms, but what are some of the later in life issues people are dealing with today that we think can be related to a vaccine in early childhood?
Okay, so right down as we go down the list, it's lymph adenopathy. So the lymphatic system can be swollen. And the reason it's swollen is normally it should take in toxins and microbes, process them out, disable them, and excrete them from the body. But we've got two problems going on. There's aluminum in vaccines, and aluminum will gel your lymph system just like the alum in pickles makes a pickle crisp. Because it's the same thing. Alum is aluminum hydroxide. That's what they put in vaccines, man.
Right.
So when I said, you know, your lymph system should process toxins and microbes. Now, wait a minute. What's in a vaccine? Toxins and microbes, man. So we're being loaded up with this foreign, if you will, insect sting of pollution, and the lymph glands will swell up as they should, but they aren't working because they've been disabled. Why? Many reasons. Multiple vaccines, like they're giving kids like 64 vaccines,
right,
can actually disable the immune system. And so they claim, okay, you know, your kid is protected. Well, here's one of the biggest, most damning things about modern medicine. Not being unwell, not having an immune response, does not mean that you're healthy. It just means that your immune system was shut off. Mm-hmm. And the moment that immune system is turned on, it's going to look at the body and go, it's a garbage dump, man. It's like, nuke this place. And so lymph adenopathy, the swelling of the lymph glands, is something that I and a chiropractor friend had noticed in ourselves and others, that you can feel like the back of your legs. And if there's like little knots in there, that's not muscles. That's the lymph glands, like a string of pearls that is so clotted and clogged that it's not moving. If your lymph isn't moving, if it's not flowing like water, you're ill, man. And so when did that happen? It happened with the first shot that you got. And it might not manifest, that you might not even notice the sequela of that for 30 years. So this is like the administration of a time bomb. You inject the time bomb and, you know, people are running around. They're doing their job. They're going to water parks. They're having fun, Memorial Day. And then all of a sudden they'll go into their doctors and they'll say, hey, you know, I got a hangnail on my toe. And doctors say, okay, we took care of that. And by the way, you got stage 4 cancer.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't believe how many times I hear that.
Right. Yeah, I've heard the same thing. If you don't go to the doctor, you don't know there's something wrong with you. Kind of like you take your car to the mechanic, you guarantee they're going to find something wrong. Oh, you need new brake pads. You got to have them. You didn't even know. New air filter, got to be changed out. So, yeah, we understand that a lot of times the modern medical system treats us like a mechanic treats a car. But give us this list, because we're 30 minutes in and we're on question 2 of my 7 pages of questions. So I want to get to some stuff.
Okay.
Let people know how widespread this is. Give us the list of conditions that can manifest that we're linking back to vaccines.
Okay. And here's some perfect examples. Serum sickness is literally the collision of antibody and antigen. They call them circulating immune complexes. And what should happen is these antibody and antigens are complex, and it should signal the white blood cells to do exactly what I said. Call in the garbage crew, get them out of there. Nuke these things. Let's destroy them. Get them out of the body. But they're circulating, which means that they can implant. They can get stuck. And so the next on the list is joint pains, arthritis. And so, you know, where does arthritis come from? Come on, Greg, you know, for people that actually go to doctors, they'll say, yeah, I got arthritis and went to my doctor and I got a shot, or, you know, I got a pill or something. But where did arthritis come from? Oh, well, you know, they say it's from old age or whatever. No, this is the military cover-up, man. Joint pain, arthritis, genital urinary symptoms. So anything to do with your reproductive organs or your excretory organs. How many people do you know, man? And because, you know, I'm saying because I do, they're going to in vitro fertilization. People are freaking sterile, man. How does that happen? Is that just the environment? Is it just because they got bad genes? Is it because of their age?
Right. You talk about that in the book, and I kind of like the way you put it, because it's like this big system the elite have set up has decided to sterilize everybody. And then if you have enough money and you come back to the system and you pay them, they will give you the privilege of having a child like you should have already been able to. But, you know, they're taking that natural ability away and then granting it to people who are willing to pay the bill.
Dude, you've got an elegant way of, you know, doing the summary. That's exactly it. And so they use that pattern for all aspects of health intervention. It doesn't matter, you know, what you pick that template up and turn it to. You can take the cookie cutter and turn it to the left, and you can turn it upside down, and you can turn it to the right. It's still punching out the same pattern, but you get different things as we go down the list, like nausea and vomiting and abdominal pain. And come on, let's be honest. How many people do you know, including yourself, that does not have some kind of gastrointestinal disease? And I'm saying disease, not just discomfort or, you know, I have a hard time when I eat a chimichanga. Your body should work like one of the most precision machines ever invented. And if you've got anything, nausea, vomiting, abdominal pain, things like that have become like a way of life for people. I constantly field conversations with people that have things like Crohn's disease or irritable bowel syndrome. And these people live in a literal hell where they can't be away from a toilet for more than, like, let's just say 10 minutes at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Their entire life is become disease of the digestive system. And see, this is all part of the list of what just serum sickness. Because, you know, I was trying to take us through the first three hypersensitivity reactions.
Sure.
Of allergy, delayed hypersensitivity, and serum sickness. And all we're talking about right now is just serum sickness leading to your guts being messed up. The next one, carditis, which is inflammation of the heart, inflammation, peripheral neuritis, inflammation of the nerves, circulating immune complexes, resulting in phlebitis. And see, all these itises, carditis, inflammation of the heart, peripheral neuritis, inflammation of the nerves, phlebitis, inflammation of the blood vessels. Mm-hmm. You got to realize what is called connective tissue is things like your bones, your ligaments, your tendons, and your blood. Blood vessels, of course. But your blood is considered, even though it's a flowing, viscous, you know, amorphous, moving thing, that's connective tissue. And if you attack any of this connective tissue, well, wait, bones, tendons, ligaments, cartilage, arthritis, man.
Hmm.
If you're attacking blood vessels, you're going to get carditis. You're going to get nephritis. Oh, my God. We just came full circle now to why I started down this path of why my mother's kidneys failed. Mm-hmm. Could it have been that, like you had opened the show with, you know, that this was like hundreds of years in the making, that even from the time of Jenner, that they were destroying our internal organs by scratching foreign infectious pus into us since 1790.
Right. You talk about Jenner a lot in the book. He is one of these researchers that seems like, you know, is responsible for a lot of these problems. You say in the book that he injected his own son in 1789, trying to demonstrate the immunity of smallpox, and his son developed a neurological disorder that very well might be the first case of autism. And that's really impressive, but it also parallels the story of Dr. Alton Ochsner, who was responsible for the polio vaccine in the 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
He, in front of an entire audience of scientists and doctors, injected his two grandkids with the polio vaccine to show that it was safe. One died, and one got polio. And there's a real parallel there with doctors who, I guess, they are sure of what they're doing, and then they come to find out they don't understand the body like they thought.
I'm laughing, and it's not at the fate of the children. I'm laughing because what you just said in such a simple and factual manner should have brought out torches and pitchforks of the average man and woman across the planet saying, what in the world do you think you're going to shoot me up with that shit for? one died and the other got polio? I mean, that's 100% kill rate. And the reason I say kill is because you can have a fast kill like the HPV vaccine where they shoot up the girl in the doctor's office. She foams at the mouth and drops dead on the floor. And then the doctor puts on the death certificate, the head injury. Okay, that's a fast kill. But if the other kid got polio, then that kid's life was shortened by a weapon that was shot into him. And it doesn't matter if he dies 30 years later. That doctor killed his grandchildren. That's murder. Okay,
right.
He killed them. It doesn't matter when it happened.
Right.
So sorry to interrupt you on that one.
No.
Kept your thought.
Yeah, no worries. And I did want to talk more about those slow kills, because with the polio vaccine, we had Ed Haslam on the show fairly recently, who wrote Dr. Mary's Monkey, and he went over the numbers that show the vaccines were tainted with this rhesus monkey virus, this kidney virus, and 1 in 200 people apparently would come down with cancer. And that's very in line with the rates of cancer, with the rise over the years and the epidemic of cancer that we have today. But there are other things. That's just one example of a slow kill from the vaccine. That one in particular is polio. But you talk about things like Alzheimer's and even heart disease, which is the number one killer out there. That's related to some degree, right?
Oh, okay. So, oh my God. Okay, I'm trying to pull up one of my books. It was in the Atlantic magazine. I'm looking for the actual citation of who I want to quote here. He was a laboratory researcher that is considered, you know, a specialist in the SV40. So that's simian virus number 40.
Mm-hmm.
And his quote in the Atlantic, and I'm not pulling it up quickly enough, is when you shoot somebody up with this monstrous weapon, the chromosomes, so that's the collection of your genes in little discrete packages. The chromosomes look like there was a bomb that went off. They're shattered, they're fragmented. And so it's almost a given. Why wouldn't you have cancer if something that aggressive was purposely put into the body from the outside? Because if you know anything about the development of the polio vaccine with Salk, they knew a long time ago that there were vacuolating viruses, and they called them frothy or foamy or spumy viruses that would just make, it was almost like a frog egg nest in their tissue culture. And Salk would go, don't worry about it. It's just a virus. It won't make a difference in the final vaccine. Well, all these things, all these vacuolating viruses are the very things that make, like, cytomegalovirus, the herpes series of viruses. And by the way, herpes is a oncovirus. It will cause cancer. That's what it means. So what we're looking at is they knew on purpose that they were shooting these weapons into people. And so this is, and it's so hard to keep this a thought in train, Greg, because it's all related. You know, each little path that we take away from the main line will also bring us back into it. But from one vaccine, one polio shot, you get the door prize of serum sickness that will always be there. But then you also get the SV40, and so then you get cancer, and it's all there. So you talk about, and you ask the question of, you know, what kind of slow kills are there? Well, there's so many, because how long does it actually take to develop the phlebitis, which is the inflammation of the blood vessels that leads to carditis, that leads to, oh my God, the body says, oh, there's inflammation of the blood vessels. I have to patch that with cholesterol. Oh my God, there's actually viruses that were shot into my body and they're in the bloodstream. I have to, you know, address that with cholesterol, because that's a response that the body makes. And then, oh, let's send some white blood cells there. And what tricks do they have? They only have, oxidative reactions. They blast everything with peroxide. Well, that's ablative. That's damaging to the body. So mm-hmm. all these things take time and they're whittling us away from the inside. And so what are the slow kills? Well, like you said, heart disease, elbows, cancer, they go back and forth, you know, depending on what statistics you're looking at, for the number one killer of North Americans. Well, wait a minute. You had me reading from this list of, well, heart disease and cancer are, they come from vaccines. So the two biggest killers of the modern world come from a vaccine.
Hmm. Yeah, man, it's a lot to take in. It's pretty shocking probably for some who haven't dug this deeply into vaccines, even if they are skeptical. And to talk a little more about this connection between the military and medicine, war and disease, the conventional idea, I think, is that with wars in the past, disease happens because you have poor hygiene and a lot of open wounds and people out on the battlefield. And you write that George Washington and Napoleon both required vaccines for the troops, and then they send the soldiers out onto the battlefield and huge amounts of people die from disease. You know, what is to blame here? Is it the vaccines, or is it just the general poor hygiene and open wounds of warfare? I mean, because it seems like they might have been, based on your research, knowingly using their soldiers as walking bioweapons even that far back. Is that what we're saying?
Oh, I like, you know, you're always taking it to the most gruesome extreme. My personal philosophy is this. If you want to take over a planet, if you want to take over the entire population of a species, then the best way to do it is to eliminate any opposition to that takeover. So if you can find people that are willing to fight, because increasingly what you'll find is that people don't even have the spirit to resist, not even in words anymore. Okay, let's take a look at this, Greg. The stats that I just heard within the past few months was that there are 3 guns to every American. Well, if you realize that there's over 300 million Americans, that's 900 million guns. That's nearly a billion guns. And yet we live in one of the most pernicious stinkholes of corruption ever imagined. And nobody's even shooting a bullet in anger, not even shooting a bullet in righteous indignation. Sure, you know, there's these false flag.
Right. Always targeting the common man, never targeting anyone who makes real decisions in this society.
Thank you. Nobody is rising against the power system, even though there's nearly a billion guns. And so how would you accomplish that? You would go back in time and you would find the ones that wanted to fight, and you would either kill them on the battlefield, good to have them kill each other while you just watch and smile, or you ensure that they will die by making sure that they get their vaccine. And so it's like a fail safe. It's like, okay, if these people aren't stupid enough to kill themselves or their fellow man, let's give them a vaccine so that their lives will be that much compromised. So should they get injured on the battlefield or later on, because we just characterize this as like a time delayed weapon, they will drop dead.
Mm-hmm. It's just so weird, because even for those of us who distrust the system today, we still have this rough idea in our heads that our past was full of diseases that would kill thousands of people, smallpox, typhoid, tuberculosis, yellow fever, the Black Plague, you name it, and that we have advances in science and medicine to thank for quelling that, even if it's been twisted for nefarious reasons in more recent times. I think that's the general idea. But when we're getting back into the history, it seems like that idea might be wrong. Is that an ignorant view of history, or is there some truth to that? Because I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, but I want to get a handle on disease.
Well, let's examine it just from the numbers. So when you look at how North America is ranked for healthcare delivery, the last statistics that I saw, so within the past 5 years, was that America was number 47th, very close to Costa Rica in its healthcare delivery, just for general healthcare. 47th? My God, you know, they're spending nearly $2 trillion on healthcare. And see, I'm old enough, Greg, to remember Jerry Lewis telethons. The guy brought in like $60 billion, and there is still MD, MS, ALS, and all the other things that they're begging money for. And I can tell you why. Because I started looking into the Muscular Dystrophy Foundation, and it says for $12, you can make sure that one of our MD kids can get a flu shot. Oh, holy crap, man. Where do you think the MS, MD, and ALS came from in the first place?
Man.
You're paying for the weapon to give you the disease that they're collecting money for.
Right.
And so nobody has ever been better for the money delivered for research, for looking for a cure. There are no cures. There's no cure for cancer. There's no cure for heart disease. They palliate all this stuff. And so in these modern times, America is ranked 47th. I mean, it's in the mix with third world countries, and America has in its rankings, it is the highest in infant mortality rate of all the developed countries.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Japan is like second for infant mortality, which, you know, these figures are abysmal. I mean, this is, you don't want to be rated number one. So right. We're looking at modern times and saying, oh, it was worse back then. Really, compared to what, man? They're literally exterminating entire like classes of people, and then what are they doing? They're sneaking people in across the borders, and it doesn't matter from where, you know, because I'm not going to be racist about this. From everywhere, we have an influx of immigrants from all across the globe, so that the intrinsic number of people that you see on the streets doesn't change, but there's people disappearing, man, because the stats are that, let's just say like 250,000 people are killed by medical procedures per year.
Mm.
250 million is like, that's like lowballing. 250 million people. You know, how many World Trade Towers do you have to destroy to get rid of that many people in a year?
Yeah, that's a great point. And, man, we're covering a lot of ground. I'm pretty sure the audience is open to these kind of ideas, but they're going to want some more evidence. Can we get to that a little bit? Can you cite some more of the documents and proof that you found in your research? Maybe this gets into Cruikshank a bit.
Oh, Cruikshank. You said the magic words, man. Okay, so Cruikshank, he's like, you know, I'm either his reincarnate ghost or something, because me and him are bros. I cracked open his book in the library stacks of the University of Illinois, and I thought, oh my God, this is like the most important work in the history of mankind. So Edgar March Cruikshank, like Virchow, was made aware of a problem in England. And the problem was that there was an outbreak of cowpox. And people are going, well, this can't be, because Jenner did his black magics from 1790 forward. So 100 years before Cruikshank, cowpox was supposed to have been, and this is the word that they use, eradicated. Through vaccination, there should have been no more cowpox. But all of a sudden, like 100 years later, boom, shows up in England. So they call in a professor of bacteriology, Edgar March Cruikshank, and he looks into it. Now, he was famous for discovering tuberculosis in the milk supply. So he was called to these dairy farms to look for evidence of, well, why is cowpox even here, man? You know, 100 years later, it should have been wiped out. And he was like so perplexed. He says, I'm going to have to go back to the source material. And so this is what you're talking about, Greg. He went to it might have been the Royal Society, it might have even been Jenner's relations, and he got all of their original documents, all of Jenner's original papers, all the correspondences between him and famous people throughout history. And he compiled it in a two-volume set called The History and Pathology of Vaccination. And he said equivocally that Jenner was a fraud and that vaccination should never have been, and that it should, in time, disappear from the face of the planet as some kind of like medical curiosity. And where are we right now? Right now, we're in the middle of a vaccine holocaust where, you know, I've seen press releases where they pulled out SWAT teams with dogs to make sure that inner city children got vaccinated at a courthouse, for God's sakes.
Man.
So when we look at Jenner's original work, what we see, and, you know, I'm going to speak to the evidence, is that Jenner knew that it didn't work. Parliament knew that it didn't work, but they gave it the green light anyway. And they funded Jenner with a stipend for his efforts that in today's modern dollars, you know, adjusted dollars for British pounds, for dollars today, would have been like $1 million grant. So that means that Parliament was in on a criminal conspiracy because everybody knew that vaccination didn't work.
Man, it's impressive stuff. I mean, you do say in the book that in the early 1900s, there was a healthy anti-vax sentiment in all the major countries. And it sounded weird to me at first, but even if I look at the past as being a much more brutal time with slavery, child labor, torture, burning at the stake, hangings, the Inquisition, all that kind of stuff. I mean, I'm not surprised that people were seeing their leaders do these things on one hand and then recommending vaccines for them on the other and being like, fuck no, not taking that.
You got a way of soundbiting this stuff, man. That's exactly it. I'm going to look for the Cruikshank. I'll get you a quote from Cruikshank of what they knew back then, because, you know, we think of any earlier time as them being not technologically advanced or ignorant compared to now. Mm-hmm. And quite actually, they were articulate. I did a transcription of his two-volume set, and so this is from History and Pathology of Vaccination, Volume 1, page 36 of my transcription. This is a quote. "I am well informed by persons of unquestionable reputation that the town of Hertford is a lamentable evidence of the danger of this practice, where the distemper was spread by it to that degree as to not only make an havoc of its inhabitants, but to hinder the commerce of the place." So, you know, in fancy language, they're basically saying somebody came into the town of Hertford, shot everybody up, and not only were they made sick, but they couldn't do business anymore.
And this was written in 1889?
Well, see, Cruikshank did his investigation in 1889, but this was an anonymous pamphlet. And see, I don't accord that any disrespect that, you know, Greg, I use my real name, and it's done harm to me in the public sphere because I use my real name and, you know, the work that I do. So this was an anonymous pamphlet transcribed by Cruikshank, who has, you know, impeccable qualifications. It's a pamphlet was written in 1722.
Wow.
So this is actually before vaccinations, and that vaccinia means from a cow. So they use cowpox as a palliative against smallpox. But in 1722, they were actually using smallpox. So they grab somebody with pus, scrape the pus off of them, and stick it into another human being. And they were literally, because I've got other books that reference that, they were killing entire villages, killing them. They'd be wiping them out because they were giving people smallpox, for God's sake.
Right.
So it goes on to say that, you know, this is so beautiful. Thus, the operator has in its power to convey the smallpox to distant places and persons who neither avow his practice or desire his experiment. Meaning, if you start scraping pus into one village, and, you know, one village does commerce with another village, you're spreading it from town to town. And if 'tis possible that the ingrafted pox be so poisonous as to communicate certain death to all around by this method, they may ingraft as violent a plague as has been known among us, which means sometimes these diseases would show up spontaneously. How far the legislature may think fit to interpose in order to prevent such an artificial way of depopulating a country is not my province to determine.
Hmm.
And, you know, they use like really fancy language, and they do it in a genteel way to say, you know, it's not mine to say that these sons of bitches are committing genocide. We'll leave that up to Congress. This was England, but, you know, paraphrases.
Of course.
He was saying, dude, this is 1722, an artificial way of depopulating a country. He started out with Hertford, and he's saying it's a way of depopulating England, man.
Yeah.
Through variolation, which came before vaccination, which we still practice that superstition today.
Yeah, so we've been sold this idea that when, you know, Europeans came over to America and all the Indians got sick, or any group of people migrating from one side of the world to another, that we've been sold this idea that disease just comes with that, that it's just a natural part of the world. But what you're suggesting and what Cruikshank is saying and what this anonymous pamphlet is saying is that they're carrying weapons around, and it is convenient that if you look at what the first settlers wanted to do, it was wipe out the Indians. You know, if you think about what the Spaniards wanted to do when they came over and met the Aztecs, that's what they wanted to do. They wanted to wipe them out. So I guess that's what we're saying, is that it's not an accident that these viruses come with these people, that they knew what they were doing and they're taking them around.
See, what you just defined very eloquently is what's called the default position. So when you push the power button on your computer, it comes up with the BIOS, basic instrument operating system. It will always come up with that. That's what it has to come up with, because that's its starting program. What you do after that is, you know, that's up to you, and it's consequential to the machine starting up in its default position.
Mm-hmm.
So when you see like an entire continent being invaded by a hostile military force, you know that they're going to want to get rid of the original inhabitants.
Right.
And what Spain used to do, and this was by order of the king, and I'm doing a search right now. I've got to find the references. And by the way, if anybody wants to contact me, vaccinefraud.com, my email address is there. If you want, find my work, you can get it through vaccinefraud.com. I've got links to it. If you want to discuss it further, if you want to find out more references, feel free to send me an email. And if I have left anything undone in the conversation that we're having, we can tie up the loose ends like the King of Spain,
mm-hmm.
where they would literally get dozens of kids ready for a trip across from Spain to, let's say, South America. And right before they put them on the boat, they would inoculate them so that by the time the boat arrived, the kids would have fresh pustules to inoculate everybody in the settlements where their destination was.
Hmm.
My God, that's malice aforethought. I mean, that's planning. That's logistics.
Yeah, man, it is pretty crazy when you put it like that. And on the same subject, I had written down some notes about a Jesuit connection, because you talk about their possible involvement. And a couple of bullet points there that in 1599, Del Rio, a Jesuit priest, wrote a book on pharmacopoeia and taught how to cast a spell to achieve mind control via the use of mercury mixed with animal blood, which, as you say, is the very definition of a vaccine. That's what it is. You also note that wherever the Jesuits went to spread religion, they also spread smallpox, which is what we're talking about. But it seems odd, I think, to a lot of us that they could contain and control a weaponized virus in that day. But I guess they could.
Well, okay. I'm looking for the citation that will help us out here. Let's see. And I have to make the apology that I've written over 20 books. And to be able to keep, the 20 books of organized data in my head and available, along with literally, and you know, since you're the opening of your show, you're reading from a citation of ICD-999 where it was just 2 gigabytes of data. I literally have over 300 gigabytes of data that I actively run through my mind to be able to make these connections. Mm-hmm. And it's like, after a while, you know, your brain's just turned to mush. So I'm looking for a citation of Epidemics in Colonial America by John Duffy, written in 1953, ISBN number 0807102059, for people that like to follow this, because, you know, of course, this stuff is out of print.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you might find it on a website, you might get it, but my stuff is, it's referenced when I make speculation. I often indicate that, you know, this is speculation on my part. I've got like a 90% accuracy making predictions. So I feel, you know, completely at ease making a blanket statement on this material. Epidemics in Colonial America, John Duffy. The Society of Jesus was sent out with shovels on their missions. And of course they, you know, predominantly did the Southwest and Spanish missions, stuff like that. The reason being, they knew that their clergy were going to be spreading disease just because they were foreigners from Europe introducing diseases that the indigenous native population had never been exposed to before. And the body counts were going to be so high that literally they were wiping out entire tribes. And so part of their kit was a shovel to bury the dead.
Hmm. That's dark.
Man, you know, words can't express the premeditation that comes with this. Because once you do, and I arrived at a point, Greg, where you have to say it the way it is. You can't sugarcoat it. You can't say, oh, well, you know, autism is a puzzle. And maybe it's just vaccines aren't bad. There's just too many of them. No, when you actually say it, that this is a military operation using biological warfare, then there is no debate.
Yeah.
There's no debating whether vaccines are good or bad or if it's a puzzle or not. No, you're under attack. And this is the mechanism of action, and this is what you can expect. Oh, by the way, they killed you, even if you're hearing the sound of my voice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're all dying prematurely. And so we're going back to Duffy in 1953, talking about what they were doing in the 1700s. They knew ahead of time, man, that there were people. And my favorite is this. I'm sorry that I bring this up every time I talk about this, but it's so grim. There was a Simpsons where Homer Simpson had become the Grim Reaper. And he was up in the bleachers during, you know, one of their football games, and he wanted to come down the bleachers. And as he was coming through the people, he'd like touch them on their head and go, pushing up daisies 6 feet under, you know, worm food. And people were parting like, you know, the wake before a ship. And I've never been able to get that cartoon on my head when I read stuff like Epidemics in Colonial America, read about the Society of Jesus, know what the Jesuits were sent out as, because the Jesuits are the Sovereign Military Order of Malta. Military? Wait a minute. Military order of religion?
There's that connection.
You know? And so it's like, all I can see is this wake of death, all premeditated throughout all history.
Right. And it's still a bit surprising how deep this goes. But today we know Merck as the main manufacturer of vaccines. And it's pretty clear now that they've lied about autism links in the MMR vaccine and HPV at a minimum. But just to give people an idea, I got this from Wikipedia, which of course is always a trustworthy source, but Merck, Sharp, and Dahm is an American pharmaceutical company and one of the largest pharmaceutical companies in the world. The company was established in 1891 as the United States subsidiary of the German company Merck, which was first founded in 1668 by the Merck family. So they've been at this a lot longer than people think. I mean, obviously, goals and players can change over time, especially when you're talking about hundreds of years. But if you look at what Merck is doing now and you think about how long they've been around, it's not unreasonable to think that in 1668, they started a company with a plan.
Well, I don't have it available to me right now. I have to go digging, but I've got an unpaid research team. These people work selflessly and brilliantly to provide the information that we do synthesis on. And one of them, shout out to Mimi. Hi, Mimi. And oh, by the way, I don't know that we gave a shout out to Granny Annie, the one that got us to this point. Thank you for getting us together. So Mimi had sent me some material. I think it was the Rothschild cartel that had a monopoly on the world's stores or ores or mining of mercury. And when you hold like a monopoly share of something, you've got to find uses for it. You've got to make money on it. Otherwise, it's just sitting idle and it's not, you know, the curse that is money is not in motion. And so what better way to get rid of the mercury than to put it in vaccines? And let's just take up that tiny little topic for just a second. They talk about mercury-free vaccines, which is a lie. And see, the reason I call my website vaccinefraud.com is because within their legal system, there are two things that do not have a statute of limitations: fraud and murder. And quite often, fraud will lead to death. And so that's why I called my site vaccinefraud.com, to show that, as Cruikshank did, Jenner was a complete fraud and his work led to murder and death. So part of the lie with the mercury-free vaccine is, and this is the way the FDA plays this fast and loose all the time, is that they don't add mercury to these mercury-free vaccines. But if in the manufacturing process, they made the vaccines and thimerosal was part of that process, then there will still be mercury in a mercury-free vaccine. They just don't have to label it because they didn't add it. And so that was what I was getting at with the fraud. They're telling outright lies. They're telling half-truths. They're omitting, you know, the bit about any given situation that would let you make a rational decision of the Monty Python, run away.
Yeah, that's important. It's tricks with language. This has already been quite a bit, but to add fuel to this fire, in modern times, as far as these things have been advanced, vaccines are just one step, because I've heard you talk before, and apparently once they hit you with the vaccine at the early age, it stays dormant in your body until it's been triggered, and there could be many triggers: malnutrition, chemtrails, wireless signals, many triggers that connect to other sectors of the big conspiracy pie that people talk about. And it's like they control you and your immune system and your body like an on-off switch, like you're on puppet strings. And I think you refer to this as building a ship inside the bottle of the human body, which is a great analogy as well.
Okay, so here's what people need to do, and don't get lame on me, folks. Go to my website, vaccinefraud.com, and go to the PDF section and read the 1972 WHO World Health Organization memos. And people go, oh, this is so complicated, it's all technical talk. Read what you can. Get out of it what you can, because these memos is where the world needs to be. We need to be up to speed to that level of understanding, even if you think it's too high, if you think it's too sciencey. Get over yourself. Read it and get as much as you can out of it, because in 1972, they were telling you how to make a vaccine as a weapon. And this is what they were doing. They were taking strains of laboratory animals, where they had either bred them genetically so that they had low or no immune system, or they treated them chemically so that their immune systems were shut off. Then they would load them up with what would otherwise be a lethal virus, And every freaking cell in their bodies would be infected with this virus. And the mice would be running around in the cage like there was nothing wrong. And I keep trying to explain this to people, and we talked about this earlier in the show, Greg, is that if your immune system isn't working, you don't feel bad, man. Because you only feel bad if your immune system is fighting something. If your immune system isn't working, you can have stage 4 cancer and you won't even know it till you go in for that hangnail and the doctor says, oh, your hangnail is fine. And by the way, you got stage 4 cancer. This is what they were doing with the lab animals. They turned off the immune system, completely loaded them up with viruses, and those animals would have lived a completely unaffected life until they switched the immune system back on. Then all of a sudden the body goes, oh my God, every cell in my body is infected. And I don't know if you or listeners have heard of the phrase cytokine storm.
Mm-mm.
That's in 1918, I believe, is the flu epidemic that was linked to World War I. They were claiming that otherwise healthy young people, and isn't that an interesting demographic to take out? Healthy young people were coming down with the flu. They experienced a cytokine storm and they were dead in freaking days. It's because the body recognized that all the cells were infected and the immune response was, I've got to kill everything that's infected. Well, if everything is infected, that's the body literally killing itself. It's not just taking out a few infected cells in your sinuses or, you know, something going on in your liver and then you recover from it. Every cell in these people's bodies was infected and their bodies were infused with inflammatory response chemicals, and it literally melted people. And so they were codifying this in 1972. And the disease that they were studying at the time, and here we go now, Greg, we're full circle to the beginning of our conversation. They were studying glomerulonephritis, kidney disease, in these test animals. In 1972, World Health Organization, the people that codified the ICD system, International Classifications of Diseases. And in 1972, Richard Nixon enrolled 1.5 million Americans into the newly developed kidney transplant and dialysis program. And see, when I present things as I do in the timeline of my ICD-999 book, it's so that you could see in a linear fashion, this shit ain't random, man.
Yeah.
It's like a checklist and they're going, okay, we got that. We got that. We got that. Okay. Tricky Dick. Yeah. Go ahead and put those people in the kidney program because we got to see how well we did. And you had opened the show with a really nice synopsis of, you know, once they do their damage, we've got electronic medical records now. All they have to do is track lot and serial number of vaccine with recipient, check their medical records and go, okay, yeah, that worked. We took out the MTHFR gene. And, you know, everybody knows what, you know, and apologies to people with sensitive ears, even autism families call it the motherfucker gene. The methylene tetrahydrofolate reductase gene is something that is known to be damaged by the smallpox vaccine that's made by Adventis, which is a pharmaceutical company. Merck, that you just brought up, actually makes an active form of methylene tetrahydrofolate, the vitamin. Because you can get folate, you know, you can drink your orange juice all day long that has extra folic acid in it, and it'll build up like a poison, because if your MTHFR gene is broken, that enzyme isn't there to activate that vitamin so that you can use it. This is the kind of stuff they did to us. And, Greg, if they have the ability to have scanned the vaccine that you got, if it's in your medical records, if they have electronic medical records, they can just track, okay, yeah, this kid got that vaccine. It took out that gene, and these are the diseases that he's now showing as a child, and we'll track him through adulthood. Military precision, man.
Wow. Man, it's so much stuff, man. And you do a great job of breaking it down, especially we've been conditioned to think one way. It takes a little bit of time to kind of work our way into, wiping that canvas clean and thinking in a new way. But when you present this stuff, it does make sense. And I'm glad that we were introduced to each other. To kind of go out on a somewhat positive note, I know that you don't have an exact solution to solving these things that are in us. But as far as things we can do to reverse the damage, I've heard you talk a decent amount about vitamin D. Of course, we get vitamin D from the sun, but they also put it in milk. And I'm just kind of curious, like, is vitamin D going to help us a whole lot? Should we be taking vitamin D every day? Should we be sitting outside in the sun for a while? Should we be drinking vitamin D milk? Is this doing anything to help us? I mean, what can we do?
You want to do another two-hour show? I'll try to soundbite this. Clemens von Perkett was the fellow that actually coined the phrase serum sickness. And in his career, he got so obsessed about vitamin D that he tried to get it into his dairy herd that he was using for his pediatric care unit with such craziness. He was trying everything, which told me that this was a man that knew of its importance. Now, that was the early 1900s. We jump ahead 100 years, and what we're stuck with, and so, you know, I'm trying to keep this in a positive vein, but I still have to tell you the pros and cons. What we're stuck with is an era where the Plum Island engineered the Lyme vaccine. Might as well have been the Lyme organism to eat magnesium, where most organisms, their main fuel consumption mineral is iron. So they mutated it, and it eats magnesium. You wonder why people have magnesium deficiency. But another unique property of Lyme is that it can take natural vitamin D in the body, and it makes a little chemical tweak on it, and all of a sudden the immune supporting role of vitamin D becomes an immune interference role. So then you have to ask, well, should I be taking vitamin D to overcome this situation, or would I just be feeding a possible Lyme infection more of what it needs to protect itself? It's always that catch 22. So let me just tell you what I do. I've got a UV ultraviolet B, as in boy, a UVB lamp that I use. And why would I do something like that that's artificial? Well, I got to go all dark cloud on you again, because I'm a man that only deals in facts. I can't make people feel good about themselves when things are really shitty. The chemtrails are filters. If you look at the sunlight, because I spent all my working life outdoors, sunlight used to have kind of a yellowish tint to it. Right now, it looks like a bluer, almost white light of like halogens in a studio. So what they've done is they covered the sky with refractive and reflective agents that the full spectrum of light is not getting through. That's going to impact our cytochrome activation. It's going to affect our photochemistry for things like vitamin D. And so I personally use a vitamin D lamp to overcome any deficiencies of activation from sunlight. I became ill from taking vitamin D. So I don't know if that's related to a Lyme scenario or if the vitamin D sources were unagreeable to my body, because it's made either from sheep's wool, yak fat, or fish oil. And depending on where it comes from, different people might have a different response to it. And so I'm sorry I can't give you a blanket answer. Vitamin D is important, but I can't say everybody go out and like get this supplement and it'll work for you, because we're so infinitely variable in our reactivities. Whatever I say might make somebody deathly ill.
Yeah, there's no magic pill, and these things are so complex. It's just frustrating to not have a clear roadmap. But man, I love talking to you. I got to let you go eventually. We've gone quite a bit over, and I didn't even ask you about daylight savings time or sunken cities off the coast of India. But hopefully we can do this again sometime. It's been
excellent,
really insightful. You have definitely dedicated yourself to understanding the depths of this stuff, and I do appreciate it. Can you give the people your website once more and give them the rundown on your many different books?
Okay, thank you. Okay, it's vaccinefraud.com. There are links to all my books from that point, and you can get my email address from there. I welcome anybody's input. I've got 15 books on vaccines and several more on other topics. And one of them is anaerobic food fermentation in the home. And to answer your question, you know, what can we do to improve our health? That's one of the things that we can be doing in the background.
Like kombucha?
Oh no! Oh my God, no! Oh. Yeah, that's terrible stuff. We need to do another show.
Got to rethink my morning now.
Okay.
Perfect. And so, vaccinefraud.com is the website. Well, thanks again, man. Really fun doing this. I mean, you know, fun is maybe not the right term, but insightful might be a better one.
Right.
Keep doing what you do, and hopefully we will talk again.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Wow, guys. Patrick Jordan going deep down the weaponized vaccine rabbit hole. I think a lot of what Patrick brought up and writes about, man, if only a quarter of it were true, it'd be a massive human tragedy. And sadly, I think more than a quarter of it is probably true. I don't know, but Patrick seems like a credible researcher who's written phone book-sized books on these topics. And we've been around long enough to know how these conspirators and their corporate fronts operate. So decide for yourself how you feel about what I know is going to be a controversial topic. And I've never been a fan of disclaimers. As a listener or a viewer, whenever I see or hear disclaimers, my first thought is, what pussies? Just talk. I don't need to be coddled. And I hope you have the same attitude. Patrick would tell you, do the research for yourself. He doesn't shy away from the conversation or the information. And the truth is, we're all going to have to make very difficult decisions about our health in this life, if we haven't already. And I'm no doctor. I don't know what to do in these situations. They're just hard. We're going to see people we care about come down with all sorts of illnesses and conditions, along with the financial plague that comes with them. And some of these people are going to do things the conventional way, and they're going to get sicker and get further into debt, and we're going to lose a lot of people we care about, and there's not much we can do. But we're also going to see people we care about saved by heart surgery, and some will go through chemo and come out on the other side to live long, healthy lives. The world just isn't as black and white as anyone would have you believe. And I don't know what disease and illness looks like in an unmanipulated world. It's been manipulated for over 100 years. We can't get a real beat on that. Are these diseases and illnesses and conditions natural, or are they the result of tampering? I know which way I'm leaning, but it is just so hard to be 100% confident. And sometimes there's multiple answers. You know, a good example of this is related to something I actually said in the Plus show. I said I'm no fan of nationalism, and that is true. But I shared a meme on this subject fairly recently on Facebook that said something to the effect of nationalism, convincing people to take pride in things they never did so they can be convinced to fight people they never met. And I thought that was a relatively shallow realization in this deep pool that we swim, but it started a back and forth shitstorm that I just would have never expected, because of course some people see the agenda of the elite as a one world government, a one world country, where we've all been stripped of our identity, intermixed, and all going to end up brown with no culture or heritage. And if I'm putting down nationalism, then I'm pushing for their plan. But the truth is, we have a one world government with a few exceptions that are isolated pockets nobody wants to live in. But otherwise, a network of central banks, think tanks, and multinational corporations run this planet. We know this. So if you're scared of a one world government, then be afraid now. And many people think that some form of this is coming, that the crisis with immigrants in Europe is about this. But I think that's too simplistic. And to deny the usefulness of nationalism as a propaganda tool and an important part of the soldier creation recipe is total ignorance. The elite want you waving that red, white, and blue because it's a subtle nod of approval for the actions of the empire. And to consider myself a citizen of the world and a member of the human family first, that's not naive. That's just the truth. American lives aren't more valuable to me just because they're on the same big island I was born on. That's not how I feel, and I can't be proud to be an American right now. I think I'm lucky to be an American compared to a lot of places I could have been born, but that's different. And I know I'm not making it easier on myself because I'm walking all over half a dozen emotional trigger topics. I know that. But it's just that kind of show, I guess. And I can get along with all kinds of people that I disagree with, as long as I think they're relatively good people. I mean, that's the base that we have to start at. And I think real intelligence is about being able to see multiple sides, multiple angles of something, to be able to, in the hardest of situations, step outside of them and look at things objectively and from every other angle. That's what I'm trying to do here. I am no expert. I just find compelling researchers that often don't get a chance to be heard, and I study their work and their perspective enough to help present their position on the air. The show really isn't even about me. And when it comes to topics like today's, I'm lost. Does the nefarious agenda go this deep and back this far? Are autism, heart disease, kidney failure, arthritis, and all the rest symptoms of prions and serum sickness? How could I ever know that? How could you? You can research this for 10 years and still not be sure. Yet the anti-vax crowd is so condescending and just mean, but they know not what they do or of the Kool-Aid from which they drink. Yet we know what happened with polio. And was that an unfortunate blunder, or is that just another bullet point in a much bigger campaign? It's definitely one reason to be skeptical of vaccines. And I feel confident saying they're suppressing cancer cures and pushing way too many unsafe prescriptions for profit. We know that much. As a base foundation, the system doesn't care about us. So really, if you know that much, the rest of the details are just gravy anyway. And think about your own family and friends for a minute. A lot of times, we talk about conspiracies as fairly abstract things. Is the moon a hologram? I don't know how much that's going to affect your life. But when you consider the people you care about and you learn about your own families, you'll probably find that the nefarious plans of the power peer squid have probably touched people in your circle, especially with a topic like today's. It's very real and it can hit very close to home. And again, it's just sad. I'm not saying it's hopeless, but we can't be complicit in this system forever, can we? What is it going to look like in 50 years? Are we going to wake up at the end of the game just to realize we've been played all this time? I think I said this somewhere in the show, but I went and saw that Vaxxed documentary. It's good, but its focus is way too narrow. The point is, the movie states research that shows that if autism trends continue as they have been, 50% of children will be on the spectrum by 2032, and 80% of boys. Is that an overestimation? It might be. But my dad has always said that he rarely ever heard about cancer growing up, and I'm sure autism even less. And we shake our heads at these stats and say, that's impossible. But we won't know until it's 2032. And then what can we say? Well, we just look around and be like, huh, I'll be damned. Those numbers were right. Seems like a pretty high-stakes game of wait and see, doesn't it? Although I don't know what we can do. I don't know what I'd recommend, except being really fucking careful with how you interact with the Western medical system and eat as well as you can in hopes to avoid it as much as you can. But I hope you dug this show and learned some things from Patrick's work that you can take to the bank. The first hour has a ton of rarely discussed information and history, and the second hour is no exception. We went on to talk about how the government reacts to the Amish and indigenous populations who do not vaccinate and how they slowly force vaccinations in order to eliminate the control group so that we can't get good data on non-vaccinated or non-tampered with communities. That's why they're going all over the world. We talked about several instances of how vaccines were used as population control by the government. One instance took place when nuns vaccinated pregnant women and were surprised to find that there were many spontaneous miscarriages taking place afterwards. Research showed in that case that hormones had been added to the vaccine. We also talked about how the alternative health movement does not go far enough to help us overcome the health problems, as well as Patrick's tips on minimizing the damage. Talked about how this campaign manifests itself in dental procedures with mercury fillings and all the stuff that they've been putting in our teeth that are slow poisons from our grandparents' generation on down. and a lot more. All fascinating stuff. I hope you'll want to hear more. Again, big thanks to Patrick. Let me know how you liked this one, guys. I know he's got way more to talk about if you're interested. And I'll see you next week. Your move, disease-peddling doctors, vaccine violators, and the big pharma medical mafia. Your fucking move.
Have a drink and a smoke. Listen to the cast. We shine a shiny spotlight. Put criminals on blast. The pinstripe men of morning and families of finance. DuPont, Windsor, and Rothschild. The kids don't stand a chance. The kids don't. The kids don't stand. The kids don't stand a chance. I said the kids don't. The kids don't stand. The kids don't stand a chance. We're looking for the answers to questions never asked. So we come to the Carwood for the higher side chats. The pinstripe men of morning and families of finance. DuPont, Windsor, and Rothschild. The kids don't stand a chance. The kids don't. The kids don't stand. The kids don't stand a chance. I said the kids don't. The kids don't stand. The kids don't stand a chance. Involved in shady business, we try to get a glance. We're working on the numbers. Resistance must advance. The pinstripe men of morning and families of finance. DuPont, Windsor, and Rothschild. The kids don't stand a chance. The kids don't. The kids don't stand. The kids don't stand a chance. I said the kids don't. The kids don't stand. The kids don't stand a chance. The kids don't. The kids don't stand. The kids don't stand a chance. I said the kids don't. The kids don't stand. The kids don't stand a chance.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the first hour of the Higher Side Chats podcast with me, Greg Carlwood. If you don't know, there is a second hour to all the episodes we do around here. Generally, we're able to get a lot deeper into the topics and ideas that a guest is about, so if you enjoyed what you've heard from THC for free, consider signing up at thehighersidechatsplus.com to get the second hour of the five shows I put together each month. I never really wanted to be a paid subscriber podcast, but I really hate the idea of spending airtime promoting some product that's completely unrelated and telling you the best way to support the show is to buy an audiobook or new underwear by mail or something crazy like that. So instead, if you like the show, double your time with it for $5 a month and let's cut out all the other shit. It's half the price of a movie ticket and you get at least an extra 5 hours of show a month. Collectively, it keeps us stable and it frees me from wasting your time with anything but the show you came to listen to. It's really the only way for an independent, one-man show to make it, and I do what I can so that it's worth your while. Since we started this, I've always tried to use the subscriptions to improve the podcast and make signups more advantageous. It started with just a second hour for the main show, but now we've got a nice forum going where people can get deeper in conversation about the episodes with other listeners, submit a candidate in the guest request thread, or share their own personal projects to get out of the soul-crushing 9-to-5 cog-in-the-wheel life on the entrepreneurs thread. The forum and the plus comments are always the first places I try to go for listener engagement, but it does get harder as the show gets more popular. Because of that, there's also a direct messaging feature that you can use to reach me through the plus site also. But beyond the forum, if you like any of the music I've used for THC, most of it I've hired artists to make, and I provided all as free downloads to Plus members too. So if you like a particular song you've heard close the show out recently, come get the MP3. I should also mention that if you don't like the idea of paying $5 recurring every month, I get that. You can buy 3 months, 6 months, or a year up front and just be done with it.
I have plenty of listeners who send checks and money orders to the P.O. Box, too. I try to make it as easy for people as I can, and you can read more about it on the sign-up page. Also, be sure to check out the FAQ help page on the Plus site if you have any questions or concerns about how to listen to a password-protected show on your devices. I've highlighted a lot of great solutions, and one of those would be the iPhone app that just recently hit the Apple App Store. A super kind and talented listener made it for us, and you can use it to stream or download either the free or the Plus show. If you're on Android, I'd use Pocket Casts or Podcast Addict and subscribe to the feed manually that way. I also try to throw in occasional bonus shows or Q&A shows, and I've got a few other weird ideas I might get to try out soon, but I give you all I can for $5, and I hope you'll at least give it a shot if you've listened to a few free shows and you find them unique or valuable. I know there's a lot of podcasts out there, and I'm just one of them. But if you have any questions, concerns, or comments about any of this, please get in touch with us at thehiresidechatsteam@gmail.com. I also wanted to plug the Higher Side newsletter I'm going to be putting out, totally free for anyone who wants to sign up at the main internet website for the show, thehiresidechats.com. You can also get on that email list through the Higher Side Chats Facebook page. There's a button there as well. But the reason I'm doing this is because I get tons and tons of emails after a show goes up asking me about how I feel about a particular guest or topic, and the wrap-up isn't always the best place to do that, especially if I have anything negative to say. Sometimes the dust needs to settle, sometimes I need to hear feedback from you guys first. There are a lot of factors, but I usually have something to communicate to you, and I just don't get to do it. So on the first of the month, I plan to send out a little newsletter with my thoughts about the 5 shows the previous month, and talk to you about anything else that's on my mind or that's going on. And what's probably most enticing is that I'm going to give you some insight into at least one guest I have coming up in the month, which people have been begging for some posted schedule for a long time. I personally think I'd like the surprise. But sign up for the Higher Side newsletter. It's free. It comes out on the first of the month, and I won't waste your time with any other emails. And that's it. I appreciate you listening. I try to give alternative ideas and guests a fair shake on a high-quality podcast, expose some deep-level conspiracies without the yelling, and I hope to offer some inspiration that even though the system relentlessly suggests you should follow their blueprint to mediocrity, you can do your own thing and live a much happier life despite all the negativity in the world. So go ahead and treat yourself. Isn't it about time?